Now let's go back to Paul's statement about the two covenants and see if it has a clearer meaning to us. It is written that Abraham had two sons, one by a bondmaid, the other by a free woman. But he who was of the bondwoman was born after the flesh. He of the free woman was by promise. Which things are an allegory? For these are the two covenants, the one from Mount Sinai, which gendereth to bondage, which is Agar, but Jerusalem, which is above, is free, which is the mother of us all. The first covenant is the law, and the second covenant is the mystery of grace. Now, when we are told that we were taken into law by Moses and from law to grace by Jesus, it meant we were taken into karmic law. In other words, the first birth after the flesh is birth into karmic law. And the entire New Testament, which is allegedly about God, is not about God at all. What man has thought was God in the Old Testament is karmic law. It's the statement that if you do this, such and such will happen to you. That God's wrath and vengeance will catch up to you. That God punishes and rewards. And God doesn't do any of those things. What was being revealed to the world was the law of karma. But man called it God. Man thought God was doing these things. God was sending the tidal wave to swallow the city. And that's why there was then the second covenant, which means the new dispensation, the New Testament. The second covenant was to reveal that man was being prepared through the knowledge of karmic law to come out of it into the truth, the kingdom of God on earth. And so Moses did his job. The prophets did their job. And you must look back and see how low the consciousness of man must have been in those days if they couldn't be told the simple truth. 3,000, 4,000 years ago. And how fantastic it is that the churches are still trying to live by those words of 3,000, 4,000 years ago, but they wouldn't think of driving a Model T Ford just 30 or 40 years ago. But they will go back 3,000 years and try to make people live according to those words which were revealing the nature of man's bondage to a law he didn't understand, which he called, in the Bible even, it's called the Lord God. And that Lord God is nothing more than karmic law. And here comes Jesus 2,000 years ago, breaking it, showing how to break it. And the churches are still teaching karmic law and saying that's God, completely unaware of what they're doing. They're not only living in a past, they're living in antiquity. And the world out here is living under that karmic law because it doesn't know it's living under it. It still thinks it's praying to God. But there is no such God to pray to. It's simply living in a sense of time. And in time, everything is an imitation of reality. So it's praying to the imitation, to improve itself. Now we've come out of that tunnel, and we know that on this earth today, if we were to look only with our eyes and feel with our fingers, we would have to believe as the rest of the world believes, that all of these terrible things are happening around us, and that if we're lucky, we might live another 20 or 30 years. But that isn't the case at all. When we know that only God is here, we have a totally new universe shaping up all around us. And when we are able not to deny that only God is here, then the qualities of perfection inevitably function in our experience. I'm going to read to you just a few of these qualities of God. Remembering that only God is here, that means only the qualities of God are here. That means no matter what you see or touch or feel or hear from anyone in the world, only the qualities of God are here. And if you are fooled by what you see, then you are still in that childish state of consciousness which thinks seeing is believing, hearing is believing, touching is believing. You're in the first birth. But if you've come even a degree out of the first birth, you know that spirit being invisible, its qualities must be invisible. And if spirit is all, then only the invisible qualities of God, of spirit, are here. And that becomes your yardstick. That becomes the place where you stand. You stand still in the truth that only the qualities of God are here. Only perfection is here. Everywhere. And that's where you stand. You stand there so firmly, and you begin to see there's a plan to this whole thing. And the plan is for the invisible qualities of God, which are here, to come only through the consciousness which knows they're here, and which, although it cannot see them, develops a different kind of faith than the world knows. Not a faith in God. The world believes in God, but that hasn't stopped any problems. You can believe in that which is not God, although you think it's God, and nothing happens that is good. But we don't need only a new man, we need a new God. We need a knowledge of the real God. That God which is the only life. And that means there's no other life. There is no dog, there is no cat, there is no antelope, there is no bear. There's only God. There is no human, there's only God. There is no tree, there is no flower, there's only God. There's no material world, there's only God. And then you see that all that we have called the world represents a world concept about all that God is. And to the degree that this concept is, to that degree we see what is projected as this world. But as our knowledge of God changes, as we know God is perfection in all things, when we witness the imperfections, we're not taken in. Because they cannot be real if God is all there is and God is perfection. Therefore, the imperfection is the false concept about the perfection that is not visible to human sense. And I, a true witness, stand in the knowledge that the invisible perfection will come forth if I remain a true witness. And I witness it by faith. Not the faith that says, oh, I believe in God. No, a deeper faith. A faith which is a conviction. A conviction that all that exists is perfection. There's nothing else in the universe. God is perfection and God is all. Therefore, perfection is all. And no matter what my eye may see, perfection is there. And so we have just a few words to remember. God is everywhere. Only God is everywhere. Only God is everywhere now. And when this is all you believe, only God is everywhere now, it makes no difference if you see imperfection or inharmony. Because your yardstick is only God is everywhere now. And what is this inharmony? What is this imperfection? It's the hypnotism of the senses. Is it practical? It's all that is practical. Nothing else is. And so if someone is dying right now, are they? Are they dying? If God is all that is, and God is here, and only God is here now, who is dying? Who is sick? And are we only playing with words, or are we in the truth? So let's take a practical case in your own life. Your principle is, only God is everywhere now. That's five words. That's your undying principle. Only God is everywhere now. And you can apply it against any problem in your life. It doesn't matter what it is. If you will stand in it, you will discover that you're not there. The problem isn't there, the lack isn't there, the limitation isn't there, only God is there. And God is not the problem, the lack, or the limitation. The only problem there is that when you do that, you wonder where you are. And you'll find you're not going to disappear. You won't weigh any less. You won't look any different. You'll be standing there as a form, just the same way you're there now. But you'll be free of that which was called your problem. Because once you know that only God is there now, God will appear as your appearance. Free of the problem. If it is this simple, why has it not been done before? Well, it has been done. Joel Goldsmith spent some 74 years on earth, more than 30 of which he was doing just that. Some of the top Christian scientists were doing that. Some of the top unity people were doing that. Some of the top new thought people were doing that. But not enough. Just those few who were illumined. Some of the Far Eastern were doing that, but not enough. At the top of every religion, anonymous to the world, There's always someone who knows. But he doesn't find anybody he can communicate it to. The world doesn't want pure truth. It wants the lie. It wants the comforts that momentarily go with the lie. And it gets them. And it loses them. But we have a hardcore group of people who are not fooled by the transient comforts, who don't want to go duck hunting for ducks that aren't there, who don't want to knit without wool, who don't want what looks to be a form without a fabric to hold it together, and who won't settle for a temporary lifespan when the promise is to know God aright is life eternal. And it's only those who have made up their minds to the fact that without truth, life is nothing. It is only those who are ready to look at the hard truth. And you know this is not a soft truth. We are taking the Master's instruction and we're crucifying the false sense of self. The Ishmael days are over. A day that is not a Christ day is not reality. I've had an opportunity within the last 6 years to see the difference between standing on the knowledge that God is all and wavering, believing that there's something beside God, and I've done both. And I've seen that as you are in the wavering state where you're not quite sure, the only thing you can experience is that wavering consciousness made visible. On the other hand, I've seen where the knowledge that only God is, and that God is perfection, God is kindness, God is goodness, God is judgment, God is justice, God is all that you would expect a perfect God to be. That knowledge, practiced in the face of any appearance, does dissolve even the appearance of death. It dissolves viruses. It dissolves fears. It dissolves pains. It dissolves everything that is unlike God. I imagine if we had enough time, it would even grow a foot back. And it's only when you have practiced looking at this thing that obstructs you in some way and come into what Joel calls no mental reaction that you begin to feel and know and experience the power of your true being. You see, you are the Spirit. And the belief that you're not makes you look at a problem as a reality. But if you were to stand in the knowledge that I am the Spirit, you could not possibly react to that problem. And so when you react to the problem, you are saying, I am not Spirit, and that's the error. That is the error. The reaction to the problem is your admission that you are not the Spirit. And there you have just denied the allness of God. In the moment that you have accepted the problem, thus saying you're not Spirit, and thus denying the allness of Spirit, you have lost the power of Spirit. It's that fraction of a second in which, unthinkingly, We are in a state of mental reaction. And it's the practice of no mental reaction, because I am the Spirit, which enables you to look at the dying friend and know that God is all there is and God is life. And not to react to the appearance of dying. Then comes a little mind that peeks around the corner and it says, but don't people die? Yes, people die. But spirit doesn't. And only spirit exists. So what shall we do? Remain people, or shall we accept spiritual identity? If spirit does not die. Now everything that leads to death is automatically excluded from your experience as spirit. Now catch the infinity of your spiritual self. It isn't just located where your form is. It isn't in that second of passing time where you are standing or sitting. Your spirit is the infinite spirit. That means it is now everywhere in the universe. It is eternal spirit. It is infinite spirit. And that's all there is. There's nothing else in the universe but your spirit. I am that spirit. And if you're tempted to accept something else in the universe, you're denying you are that spirit. Your denial of that spirit brings you back into the law of karma. Your integrity to that spiritual self that you are removes you from the law of karma. And as you practice that integrity again and again, you find that all of the power of spirit is in you. And the false claims against you have been making a claim only against your false consciousness, never against your spiritual self. Because you have not exercised your spiritual authority, your spiritual identity, you have accepted the false claims which exist only in your separation from your own spiritual identity. Now, where is God in all this? Do you see you have a new God? My spirit is God, and there is no other God on this earth or anywhere else. My spirit is God. Your spirit is God. God is the only spirit. God is the only life. And this is the new God, which is the only God there ever was. This is the God of Jesus. This is the God of Moses. This is the God of the prophets. This is the God of Buddha and Krishna and Lao Tzu. Why? Because each of these individuals is the spirit which is that God, which you and I are, but have not known ourselves to be. And then, with your human mind, you will crucify that God. You will do it every day, 100 times. Always the two thieves will crucify the Christ. But in spiritual illumination, the Christ will take the two thieves into paradise. In spiritual illumination, instead of crucifying the Christ will crucify the unreality. Now, Joel calls his book three different sections. From darkness to light, from humanhood to immortality. Not by attaining it, but by exercising it, for that is the reality already. From unreality to reality, not by attaining it, but by accepting that only reality can possibly exist right now. From law to grace, and the law is karmic law, cause and effect. In grace, in reality, there is no cause and effect, because all cause is God, all cause is spirit, and cause and effect are one and the same in spirit. Now, it takes the experience of working as a practitioner to do certain things in this work that can't be done any other way. And only as a practitioner do you find out that you can stand on the altars of God through practice and face the worst things this world can offer without the need to defend against them. If these cases did not come up time after time after time, there would have been no way to test this knowledge. But they do come up. A woman will tell you that her mother is dying. She's lost all her blood. She can't possibly last. And all she's telling you is that God isn't there. That's all she's telling you, but she doesn't know she's telling you that. Another mother can tell you her son was run over. He's dying. Another one can tell you my husband has cancer. He's dying. All they're telling you is God is not there, there, and there. In their anguish, they know what they see. And what they see is all they can know. And if you haven't had the practice, you know only what they tell you. He's dying. And if he's dying, you may as well give up, because there's nothing you can do about it if he's dying. And if he's dying, there certainly isn't a God who is all, is he? Because God isn't dying. And if this one's dying, there's God and a dying one here. There's God and 5 million who are in hospitals. There's God and 5 million who will get hit on the highways. There's God and 5 million who are starving all over the world. All these people are saying, without realizing it, is that God is not everywhere, and God is not the only. And you are to turn and reverse the tide of human thought. All of world thought must hit you, and you must not budge. No one can die because God is all. No one can be sick because God is all. No one can have an amputation because God is all. And the faith that enables you to do that is not a faith of reason or logic, but that beautiful, strange and wonderful conviction that comes into your heart in some way to make you know that your demonstration is to be true to the invisible infinite that we call God. And as you are true to that infinite invisible, the fruits of the spirit to which you have sowed shine forth where you are, in your life, in your experience, in all your activities, only as signs, evidence, that what you have done is the truth. Now, this is emphasized because the sense mind of each of us always reacts to every appearance before we get a chance to stand there in the realization of truth, without reaction. And so we keep signing away our real life, giving it to time so that it can die in time. From my brief experience, it not only is possible, but it's inevitable that we all come to the place where we can observe any infringement that appears in our human experience with the unmoving consciousness that there, invisibly, is harmony, perfection, wholeness, purity, truth, reality, life, uninterrupted by that mirage called the physical appearance. And when you can practice that sufficiently, you will find your finances, your health, your bills, your relationships, your achievements, your fulfillments, and your absence of fear and doubt and worry will all appear as part of the fruits of your ability with that new kind of faith to accept the only God there ever was, perfect being everywhere. There is nothing in the world that can prevent you from proving this if you have decided you will. And by that I mean there's nothing for you to do in the face of an evil. Nothing to do. Nothing to do in the face of 10 simultaneous evils, except to look at them, having practiced enough of the silence that you can stand there and say to yourself, only God is everywhere now. And then let that be your sword, your pistol, your cannon, your nuclear weapons, and do nothing else. Nothing else. And you will discover the power is in you the moment you have reached that place. It will grow oranges on a tree. It will go green grass on a lawn. It will change a plant that is dying to one that is living. It will put smiles where there are frowns. It will remove wrinkles. It will remove pain. It will bring what the name Isaac meant in this second covenant. It means leaping with joy. Leaping with joy at the new birth. And the new birth is that realization that I am truly the living child of God. And all of the power of God is truly part of my being. And no one on the earth can take it away, because there is no one on the earth except the Spirit of God itself. Of course, it's easy to say these things. I have trouble working them out, but I do find that as I work them out and work them out and work them out again, there does come a place where even you get amazed at the power of the infinite invisible that flows through you. And you realize there never was a physical you. The illusion has been so great that we have accepted the form as ourselves. And finally, when you see the power of the life where the form is, you realize that I have never lived in this world at all. I only thought I did. The only place I can live is in life. And life is not a visible form. Life is an invisible presence that the world calls God. Only there can you live. And only when you live there are you in life eternal. That is done in your consciousness, which is purified of the belief that you are something else, until it becomes the God consciousness, the one consciousness, the conscious awareness that the Father, Spirit, and I, Spirit, are one Spirit, and beside us, nothing else exists in this universe. Now that's the absolute message of the Christ. We wished it stated explicitly in this first chapter because I want you to measure everything said in this book against the truth, so that everything said in the book doesn't come to you as a newness, but rather as a reinforcement of the truth that is in you now, so that this truth in you, reinforced by every word that Joel gives us, reaches you in such a way that you feel the power of your being, the strength of life, and feel the emptiness of the shells that we have accepted as life. This can and will be done because it is the will of the Spirit that we be perfect as the Spirit, which is called Father. So this is our challenge for the year. And I expect to be here to work with anyone who wishes to be worked with to help meet that challenge. We're going to succeed together. But we're only going to succeed for one reason. Because it is already the truth now. We're not going to make it the truth. It is the truth of being now. And as we lose our false beliefs, the truth of being now will be that truth realized, experienced, practiced, lived in. And the fruits of that truth are the fruits of the Spirit. These are the things that God is. And you can add to your list God being everywhere now. These qualities are everywhere now. And no other qualities opposite to these qualities. Divine mind is everywhere, and there is no other mind anywhere. And that divine mind is only thinking perfect thoughts. You can accept that only perfect thoughts of divine mind are everywhere. So when you see an imperfect thought, you know it isn't a real thought. Only divine power, divine intelligence, divine harmony, divine beauty, justice, judgment, law, truth, cause, fairness, kindness, purity, wisdom, love, goodness, perfection, divine will, divine reality. Do you begin to see that only this is what exists now, and we need not accept what isn't? Divine wholeness, health, abundance, fulfillment, cooperation, gentleness, purpose, trust, faith, indestructibility, indivisibility. You can go on and on. Immortality, liberty, righteousness, peace, substance, continuity, energy, forgiveness, brotherhood, goodwill. These exist because only God exists. Why accept the opposite? Put it to the test. When faced with anything opposite to these, you're looking at a shadow. Get out of the false consciousness. That's what the shadow is telling you. You're in a false consciousness. The evil isn't there, but the evil is telling you that you're in a false consciousness because you're experiencing the evil. And now you see why the evil must be there. To awaken you to the fact that you're in a false consciousness, otherwise you wouldn't see and experience evil. And so now you use it as a chart. Evil appears, you say, I'm in a false consciousness. Only God is here. Only God is there. Until the evil goes. Until you see it wasn't evil. It only appeared that way to the false consciousness. Ishmael becomes Isaac. And finally, both become Christ. But Christ is the now reality of being. And so with the story, with the allegory completed, we can put it in the past and forget it. We can forget Hagar, the bondwoman. We can forget Sarah, the freeborn wife. We can forget the two boys. We take the principle that only the Spirit of God is, and we have elected grace. By our own free choice, we have come into the realization that grace, perfect automation, is already the only living self on this universe. And we're not going to adulterate that truth by a false consciousness. Now we'll have plenty of opportunities to apply our belief, plenty of opportunities to affirm, authenticate, crystallize the new self. And the more opportunities you have, the better. Because just knowing this is of no value whatsoever. You must be prepared to let this knowing become a living. And you'll find you're given all the opportunity to apply this knowing. This world will give you that opportunity. And you must expect this world to give you that opportunity. That's why this world is here, so that the grace of God can be made manifest, so that the wisdom of God can be made manifest, so that the fruits of God's presence can be made manifest, until you know that every time you stand in the knowledge that only God is, something is going to change in that outer to show forth not the image of world thought, but a different form, an image of the divine. And you are bringing out of the invisible into the visible the divine image. Everywhere the divine image of justice can appear for you. The divine image of purity can appear for you. The divine image of abundance can appear for you. The divine image of all that God is can appear for you if you refuse the false world image. And so to the Christ of your own being in the silence, knowing nothing else is. And you'll feel that rainbow. You'll feel it. It will manifest. And it says, I am now come here. And I will show forth for you the divine image of that which you have accepted in your consciousness. Your consciousness of truth must externalize as the divine image of truth made manifest. That pure consciousness must always be the ultimate power. And so it's practice for all of us. And in these 18 or 19 more weeks, we'll see how Joel reinforces this desire in us and enables us to come face to face with the invisible reality that shows forth as the divine image and likeness of God on earth. We are bringing that forth into the visible world through our purity of consciousness. And we each need the support of the other while we move along, testing, experimenting, refusing to let world thought bury us in time that dies. Next week, we're going to discuss karmic law more thoroughly. We've touched on it, and that's the chapter for next week. If any of you find that you have a problem that you have been unable to solve, remember that it is already solved by the Christ. And if you will touch the Christ of your own being through acceptance of it, you will discover the problem is not as weighty as it had appeared to be. If I can be of use, let me know. Well, a happy new year to all of you. A Christ New Year. Thank you very much.